Jai Ma. The law of karma exists and destiny catches upon you sooner or later. Throughout my medical days, I used to dislike afternoon classes. And whenever I was caught napping, I would say I am meditating, and neither me nor the teacher knew the difference between sleep and meditation. So forgive me for keeping everybody awake in the afternoon, and you feel free to sleep. Because as we have read in Savitri, even when we fail to look into our souls. So yes, so that's the whole process of transformation. It's a two-step process. The first process is a slow preparation. And very often the preparation goes on without our knowing that something is happening. And then there is the magic. So logic is not visible to us because things are happening which we don't quite understand. And then one day there is what mother says, the chick coming out of the egg. She gives two very interesting examples. She says that there is inside the egg the chick is forming, and nobody knows what's happening inside except perhaps the hen. Or hen has the faith and she is sitting and giving heat. And then one day when the chick is ready, there is the peck, little peck from the hen, and it emerges. So for a long time, all our efforts done ignorantly or with knowledge, they are two sides of one coin in our human state. What we call as knowledge is not necessarily knowledge. But nevertheless, we think we know how to do, what to do, and we are doing it. And there are times when we think we don't know, and yet something is being done. So either ways, the chick is getting prepared. And one day, the chick emerges. Meaning thereby, if people say that nothing is happening in all of you guys who is claiming to be a supramental yogi, don't worry. It is the chick going on inside the egg which is getting prepared. And then it comes out and flies, and then there is the reversal. So that's magic. So she gives another example of a hunter shooting in dark, and he is shooting randomly, doesn't know if anything is being hit or not, and he gets tired and he sits. And suddenly when he wakes up in the morning, as the sunlight comes, he sees so many game have been actually hit by the arrow. So very often we try to do the right thing, even for transformation, do the right thing. And mother says that if you have that kind of an attitude, or this always wanting to do the right thing, often acts like an ill will. It doesn't help much, because in our ignorance we really don't know what really is the right thing or the right way. So to admit that ignorance, and that's why Sri Aurobindo gave only one process open to her. So that's the key of this yoga. So nevertheless, when does it begin and how does it begin? It begins with a well-known word that we all know is faith. Something touches us somewhere and we don't know why, we don't know what is its origin, but something in us tells us that, well, this is what it is. Logically, we can explain it either ways. Though, if you ask me, if you apply the logical mind, then transformation is inevitable. There is no other way, logical extension of what has been going on we can arrive at, except that there will be a transformation. Even if you don't believe in the divine. If you believe in the divine, then it's very evident, that's the logic of transformation, that what is inside will emerge. So if the divine is at the core of this universe, core of creation, then through a period of process of whatever he decides, manifestation, he will emerge through form and name. That's the whole idea. So there is the involution where the divine consciousness becomes the seed, and then through a process which is a process if you look at it in hindsight and study it, but actually it's just a struggle. If you ask the seed, what are you doing? He says, I don't know, I feel a compulsion to move up. What's up? He says, I don't know. Outsider will say, there is the sun and the warmth is attracting and the seed is defying gravity. Maybe if somebody is present right there, he says, you know what, you can't. Because logically you are supposed to go down. But the seed defies it. What an attraction of the sun. It comes up. Again you ask the seed what's happening. It's like a baby in the womb. What's happening? You say, I don't know what's happening. But something is happening. And I'm kicking around. So he doesn't understand. And probably if you ask the baby, maybe he'll say, see, my final kick opened the door to a new world. That will be the baby's logic. I kicked and kicked and one day you see I am out in this new world. But if you ask the mom, you say, okay, you may congratulate yourself. But that's not how it is. So what is inside will emerge. This is a plain logic if we take it as the divine. And if we don't want to, we are afraid of the word because we have too much self-importance to ourselves. That's why that's the one big advantage of, you know, why Buddhism became so prominent, why even the Advaita philosophy appeals, because it's Brahman. As a being, man is highest. Beyond it, it's a state of consciousness. That's okay. I'm still the highest. So rest is a state. But the moment you bring in being, then there is a problem. There is someone, not just something. And it's very difficult for the human arrogance to accept. And so it very often fumbles. It doesn't feel very happy, comfortable, because it's a direct affront to his individuality. But then if you look at it the other way, that being is our completeness, because this is a question Sri Aurobindo raises in Essays on the Gita. That if we say that there is only the Brahman as the reality, immutable existence, or immutable consciousness, So, it's the culmination of all that we are and ends up in that. Then what about this personality? Does it have something corresponding somewhere? What is the origin of love? What is the origin of the joy we experience in life? So does it have something corresponding? And that's where we see the beauty. The Gita for the first time reveals it. And then, yes, of course, Sri Aurobindo brings it in bold relief that the origin of our personality is in the divine personality. And this is a shadow. So all our experiences and movements in nature have a divine origin. That's why there can be transformation. Otherwise, there is no way. If we are strictly Advaitins, there is no logic of transformation at all. There is Maya and there is Brahman and there is this world of names and forms, which is an illusion. But the moment we accept the idea of Purushottama in the Gita, why I'm referring again and again, because there are many traditionalists who say, no, Sri Aurobindo is saying something which is not there in tradition. It is there. Sri Krishna speaks about it. He takes pains to reveal the three Purushas, and he goes to the extent that he even shows him his own Visharupa. And there all our tendencies, human tendencies, tendencies of the heart, of life, of thought, everything finds its grand culmination. Meaning thereby, human intelligence is a little droplet of the divine intelligence. And it's not just in degree, as some people say, oh, human intelligence, you upgrade to a point, it becomes divine intelligence. No, it doesn't work like that. It's a completely different kind of operation. That's why the mother uses the word reversal. It's a very different way. So we can say very loosely that animal intelligence and the human intelligence are both intelligence, but the way human intelligence operates is very different from the way the animal intelligence operates. You can't keep on stretching the animal intelligence. There has to be a point where there is a completely new set of operations come, which we read in the morning, hidden powers emerge from nature's sleep. So our human intelligence, HI, is a little degraded version, or this, whatever we want to call it, impure version or a limited version. That's how the Maya, typically the word Maya, it's a very limited version of DI. In between somewhere AI has come. I am, well, that's okay. So, and why the problem of AI? This one thing which I keep on, you know, we have an AI specialist in our midst and we are discussing. Because the human intelligence has to evolve into the divine intelligence through its own processes. Now, when you shortcut the process, you have an end result, but you don't know how you arrived at it. It's dangerous. You want to write an essay, but you're not using your cognitive processes. You have one click button. Wonderful. But you have bypassed your evolutionary process. And that's the problem, incidentally, of modern medicine also. It has tried to bypass the evolutionary journey through which the body and the mind uses its defenses to counteract and grows into organically robust natural health, which is very different from artificially supported. But that's a different discussion. It's understandable because the mind, in its efforts to surpass, is likely to create its own apparently greater capable version. That's how, behind it, the mind's urge to surpass. But it cannot. It has limited operations of calculation, thinking also. It creates something. Like, you know, in ancient times, the asuras used to create kritikas. And these kritikas were formations created out of the asura and the rakshasa to go far and destroy things. But that's one side. We need not worry about it. But this human intelligence is going to be upgraded. So it's a very limited version of the divine intelligence. What about human emotion? What about human speech? So human speech is again a very mild, what is called a crude version of the original vibration, the nad. That's how we have four layers of speech through which the speech descends. We thought speech is evolving. And what are these four layers? Paravak, the original star of creation. Spandan. See, when we say universe is expanding, is it expanding linearly or all around? So it's because it's a vibration. It's not just a push. It's expanding. Nad, that's how it is. Then there is Pashyantivak. It's a seeing intelligence which sees things but cannot really... Yet, it doesn't yet, not cannot, but it doesn't yet formulate in terms of thought and words. And women are endowed sometimes with this kind of an intuitive sense. It's not Pashyanti Vak literally, but they are endowed with this kind of a kind of sense which they cannot articulate in actual words. Many people, some people have this. So Pashyanti Vak, but with yoga it develops. Seeing intelligence, that's how it is called. Shyamindu spoke about Krishna Prem. That he has the seeing intelligence, Pashyanti Vak. So you are able to see things, bypassing the way people normally would analyze that this word means this and that word means that. And suddenly you are able to see, oh, what is behind it. Then it enters into the two lower levels. So these are the two higher levels, concealed. So the two lower levels are Madhyama. Madhyama is our normal thoughts when they start, it takes. And Vaikari is the human speech. So what were the yogis trying? Mantra. Mantra was the highest intensity of human speech. That's how they were experimenting. When the speech arrives at its highest intensity, it becomes creative because that's the origin. The star of creation, the Nath. So in highest intensity speech has its own creative power. That's how people could bless with a boon, yogis. The universe will now conspire to fulfill it. Or they could curse, which was also a blessing but concealed in disguise. So that's how we have the original, and this is a very miniature replica. Very often a crude replica. If we are satisfied, and the same with all the layers, with the heart. So what about the heart? We have human love and we know its joys and its failings. But there is the divine love, which is its origin. Divine love does not operate according to human ideas of love We want to, I'll make you happy and you make me happy. As long as you make me happy, I'll make you happy. Divine love doesn't act according to that. Divine love's purpose is to lift everything up towards the heights. It never leaves. It's unconditional by its very nature. And all love in the world is a diminution, a degradation, even a degeneration of that original love. That's what we read in the morning. And that's why Mother says there is only one love. And that is the love, the divine love, which in human beings takes the form of love for the divine. So what about two human beings loving each other? She says, love is coming from the one and going to the one. The day you realize it, then things will be wonderful, because that's how the divine love operates through creation. What about life? Life also has its divine origin. That's why it can change into divine life. If it doesn't have a divine origin, it will not be able to change into a divine life. So whatever life seeks, the delight of existence. Life seeks, its nature is to possess power and delight. That's its nature. In the divine, it's self-existent. Self-existent power and self-existent delight. And of course, even body, this matter has its origin in a divine substance. That's why when people see God, we're not discussing into apparition, hallucination, that's a different subject. But when you have a vision of the divine, so divine, there is a substance. That's how you see. The nama rupa means there is a substance. That's how when in the Gita, Shri Krishna shows who he is, there is a substance. That's how the nama and rupa is formed. The name and the form. That matter is the original matter. Mother speaks about it so many times in the agenda. And she says, this is a very false matter. There is a true matter. So the logic of transformation is that in our origin, what is there will one day replicate itself. But only thing is, we should not stop with the replica and go to the original. If we stop, then there is a it's like when you go to Konark, one of the, I keep promoting, not promoting, but it's a wonderful sun temple. Its story, its architect, it's just amazing. It's in Orissa. And amazing, its symbol is so amazing. So when you go to the Konark temple, before you reach there, they have those little bit Konark temple replicas, and you can buy it and take it. So every temple has its own. So we are simply replicas, but it's only a miniature image. So this miniature image has to grow into the true image. And this miniature image is also something wonderful. There is so much which can be spoken only about the human form. And that's how sa purusha evascha, it applies at every level. We are made in the image of God. And when you see the Purush Sukta of the Rig Veda, it describes the divine as the great Purusha. So there is this same image nature has tried to create in terms of form. And because this form has been built in that image, it's capable of ultimately holding something of that truth and undergoing the transmutation. So it's not a joke. See, look at the way forms have evolved from mud and water to slowly, they are jumping, hopping, then they begin to, the snake tries to become erect. Serpent is, that's why the symbol of evolution, because suddenly you see a land creature raising its head. You see some of these, the cobra particularly is a symbol of evolution. Many are hostile forces, I know, but cobra is an evolutionary serpent. It can stand erect like man, 6 feet, even more than that sometimes. It's trying to just, as if it's going to take off, but cannot take off. But it takes off in the bird. Evolution. That's how it goes. And then we see the extreme vitality in the animal world, and then eventually the human form. And there's a whole story in one of the Upanishads. Taittiriya, is it? Taittiriya Upanishad, which speaks about the human form. And all the gods say this is the form that we want to reside in. So this whole creation has been preparing for this moment of evolution and transformation. It's not hanging in nowhere and suddenly Shurbindu is saying something. There is a whole process through which it has been prepared. Even the form has been prepared. over a period of time to be able to hold, because the form and consciousness have to adapt to each other. It's so important, not just about I grow inside in consciousness, but my form is not ready. Mother describes the first contact with the supramental force penetrating the head, and she says that it is as if the head is bursting into million pieces. And we have the story of Gargi and Yajnavalkya, where Gargi asks final question to Yajnavalkya before certifying he is the real Brahmagyani. And she starts by saying, when the fire is put out, when the sun is not there, then what gives light? Okay, moon. When the moon is not there, stars. When the stars are not there, fire. Says when the fire is not there, he says self. See, when the self is not there, what gives light? So Yajnavalkya says, Gargi, if you ask one more question, your head will split out in 1,000 pieces. He's not warning her. Many people quote this story as if, you know, anti-feminism story. It's not about Gargi. It's about the limit of the laboring mind is reached. Now the mind cannot conceive million thoughts, million forces simultaneously coming inside, and they are being canalized. That's how the apprehending and the comprehending supermind operate. So it cannot. So it has to be prepared. If not, the brain will burst. It won't be able to. Before we become supramental, we may become inframental. That is so true. People can lose their mind. So a long preparation is needed. And same thing applies everywhere with the heart. The onrush of divine love can really set the fellow palpitating, not realizing what's happening. And I do suspect that many of the diseases are the result of, in today's times, I'm qualifying it, is because the human body is feeling the pressure of the new forces and it doesn't know how to adapt. And it's going through that process. It will go through that process. It will be led through this process till eventually it finds a way. But doctors are busy labeling children, labeling grown-ups with all kinds of diseases. Well, that's their business. We should not take away anybody's dal roti, anybody's, you know, bank balance. So that's okay. Not against anyone. But there is a process going on. And mother speaks about all these things. So this right now we are seeing accelerated evolution. So there is a long preparation through war and toil and this thing. Then there is the accelerated preparation, because you are now entering into that zone when the aircraft will take off. You can't say cut off after that point. So this is where we are going into through the conveyor belt, and then comes the magic. So what's the magic? Everybody knows that the most difficult moments of flying are takeoff and landing. Once it takes off, it's magic. Ah, so wonderful. How is it moving? It doesn't have. There's no stable ground. No, it's moving. There's a point. So it gathers momentum. So all our human efforts, we may think they are right, we may think they are wrong. But what matters is the will behind the efforts. That's why Shubhendu gives the key as aspiration. Why you are doing what you are doing. To put it very simply, walking just to build with your, what is that called, smart watch, which counts steps. Fitbit. Yeah, all kinds of names. It keeps an account of how many steps you watch. Walking that way is very different from walking consciously with intention. Doing exercises to build muscles is very different from doing exercises with a conscious intention of making the body supple and open. And if we do that way, then everything, climbing the stairs, as mother says, walking, so many activities, they all can become useful feeders to this process of transformation. Why? Because mind is a mediator divinity. It has to bring in the cells to a point where they begin to develop some consciousness. Who will bring mind till the psychic being awakens and steps forward? Mind has to bring it. So in all our actions, that intention has to come. So what matters is not what we are doing externally. What matters is what we are doing, what is happening internally. So there was a man who would sit for meditation for a long time. And somebody asked Shri Bindu, how lovely. He meditates for so long. I wish before he could probably complete, Shobindu says, yes, on his wife. He could see. He meditates for so long. So it's not that we are sitting in a closed posture, a lotus posture, and you know all that. That's very nice if one does it. But you may be just walking. Look at Shobindu, 8 hours a day he was walking. And that aspiration, I'm just 8 hours a day walking in a room is phenomenal. It's a superhuman only can do it. I have tried literally, how much can I do? After half an hour, 45 minutes, max 1 hour, then you start getting feeling, what is this? And he was doing it, and he was doing many other things besides. So everything, when it becomes a conscious process by the mind, then slowly matter begins to become somewhere, it dimly becomes aware. And then if the psychic comes, then that's wonderful. So all this will, aspiration, faith is the real thing that is operating from behind. And then through all these good or bad or partial efforts, one day there is the magic. Magic is, you didn't know that this is how it will happen. And it would happen unexpectedly when the time comes. It's not like one is sitting in meditation, suddenly had an aha feeling. It may happen, but it may not happen. It may happen most unexpectedly. So this is how there are several such small steps at every level that we take. At the level of mind we can take to stretch. See, people often ask, why is Shobindu written in so difficult language? Actually, it is not so difficult. Difficulty is in our mind because we want to read some, you know, I often suggest people, if you find this difficult, please read Bertrand Russell and Shankaracharya. You'll find it fairly simple, Shobindu's writings. They're too direct. Honestly, they're too direct. He is saying what he is seeing. He is not building concepts through which you have to move. It's so direct. But even otherwise, if we take it that they are difficult. But what happens in the process? The human mind stretches itself. Once somebody asks Shobindu, why don't you further simplify it? Because synthesis of yoga, he said, I have brought it down to the higher mind level and kept it there. Why don't you further simplify it? Though letters on yoga are very direct and simple. So he said, make some effort. By the very fact that we read, we strain, we don't even realize that the mental consciousness is trying to. And in the process, it is getting changed. That's how Mother said, when you read Shobindu, doesn't matter if you don't understand. Stay quiet. And then she says, in fact, something very interesting. Do not try to understand. Why? Because when we try to understand, why, what is the problem? We understand on the basis of all the concepts going on in the mind. I have seen people who ask at the end of everything, he says, okay, no, that's okay, but tell me what school of yoga philosophy Shobindu stands for. Is it Dvaita? Is it Advaita? Is it Dvaita Advaita? Partly they are testing me. So I tell them, Shobindu is not in school anymore. He has completed post-graduation. You are still stuck with schools of philosophy. Because we want to. The mind is there. It has all its data. It suddenly comes up. Oh, so-and-so says so-and-so. This is a big problem. But when we are quiet, then we are ready to receive. Mother would even say that if you sleep, doesn't matter. You read. Amrita would, sitting with three of them, and as mother is going up, she sees them sitting. Amrit, what are you people doing? Mother, we are reading. What, mother? What are you reading? The Life Divine. Mother, we are reading this chapter on Brahman, Ishvara, cosmic indeterminates, etc. Mother, we understand nothing. So see, gives a little tap here and goes up. They are projected into the consciousness of Brahman. Then she comes back, they are still sitting. She calls them down and she says, my child, I can give you this experience like this, But this is not what we are here for. We are here for something greater. And she says, continue reading. Why? Because she says, if you read, then after some time, new brain cells are created within the human brain to understand. So just imagine, isn't it the beginning of physical transformation, new brain cells, because brain is the seat of consciousness in human being, just as heart is the seat of dynamic impulsion. So this is where the, you know, consciousness is received first, and this is where it gives the creative urge. So these are the two important nodal points. Shubindu and the mother would speak of concentrating on either of them, though mother would prefer the heart, because this is the point from where all dynamic impulsion comes. And she has used the word dynamic meditation for that. So this by engaging, reading Sri Aurobindo, new brain cells are created. That's why the mother says, if you read Savitri, it will take you to the highest transformation without the need of an outer guru. Because Savitri contains, it's a capsule. Each word, phrase, line is a capsule of light and delight. So what happens when you take the capsule? As a doctor, there are two kinds of patients who come to me. Those who come and say, doctor, prescribe me this medicine. In ashram setup, very common, and I'm very happy. I don't have to use my brains. The other type who want to understand, that is very difficult, you know, because there is a whole science behind why you are using this particular antibiotic, and you know, they have read Google search everything. But there is a third type. They come, they receive, they eat, they take it, and they get well. Because whichever way you go, the medicine will have its effect. But if my mind is full of doubts, it creates its own conflict and confusion inside. But all this cannot be explained to a patient. You can't say, I have told you as a doctor authority, you take it. You spend time explaining, not realizing that the more you try to do it, the more you are actually interfering with the process. So that's why she uses the word just open. So when we read Savitri, we develop the intelligence, we open to Sri Aurobindo and the mother. This one thing which mother has said, someone asked mother, why should we read Savitri and why should we go to the Samadhi? She says, you read Savitri to develop your intelligence, to join with that divine intelligence. The join part is in brackets. She doesn't say that, but it's understood. And you go to the Samadhi to develop devotion towards Sri Aurobindo. So it carries within it. So when we read it, the words continue to operate within, create their own first in the brain. Once the brain opens up, or the heart opens up, then the rest of the process becomes easy. One of these two has to open up particularly. Of course, there is no hard and fixed rules. And that's why we see when Sri Aurobindo describes the process of transformation from above downwards, unlike in Kundalini, we are opening from below upward, which is dangerous besides, for obvious reasons, but that's a different subject altogether. Like golden light came down into my brain. The grey rooms of my mind, sun dust became a bright reply to wisdom's occult plane, a calm illumination and a flame. Then it, transformation of speech. Like golden light came down into my throat, and all my speech is now a song divine. A pain song of thee, my single note, my words are drunk with the immortal's wine. Speech is the center between the inner and the externalizing consciousness. Thy golden light came down into my heart, smiting my life with thy eternity. Now has it grown a temple where only thou art, and all its passions point towards only thee. Thy golden light came down into my feet. My earth is now thy playfield and thy seat. So this is the process. We have to just open. And if we open, depending on where we are, how much challenges, resistances, they each one will bring their own resistances. Mother used the word shadow, which is we read today. The past. Each of us have a whole baggage we are carrying from the past. It acts like a shadow. What we wear is the problem, is what resists us from being what we yet can be. That's why Mother says, in the eternity of becoming, each avatar is the forerunner of a more perfect future realization. But mankind has a tendency to worship the avatar of the past in opposition to the avatar of the future. So we all bring our baggage. It doesn't matter. Each of us. And we should not keep pointing somebody else's baggage. Maybe, you know, it's enough to manage your own. Everybody brings their shadow. There is nobody who doesn't have it. And each will be unique. That's how the universe is arranged. But she says that the beauty is that you are given your own difficulty, which is unique to you, and that's your shortcut. It's so true. If that is gone, then the whole process becomes rapid. And it may not be in somebody else. Somebody else may have something else. But we are so busy observing everyone, that sign of ultimate ignorance is that the world is bad. I am good. Wisdom comes when we see that there is nothing in somebody which is not there inside me. And then of course the highest wisdom, which looks up beyond all these things towards the light that is growing inside. So this shadow will come. It will resist. What is to be done? This shadow frightens us. It almost makes us feel stupid and foolish, unfit. But all these, that's why they'll throw doubts. It will hold us back. He'll tell us, no, you see, what everybody is doing is good after all, you know. You don't be crazy. He'll stop you in 100 ways. And that's the debate of death. But instead of listening to it, you have to listen to that little voice, that faith which has brought us. And turn to the mother and offer this shadow. Then she takes care of it. It becomes thinner and thinner and ultimately a very thin shade of light, and then it goes away, gray. So that's the process. Everybody has to meet this challenge in this yoga, because it's not leaving the world and going away. Even there, we have to tackle with our difficulties, but not to that extent. Because you can be a yogi inside and an idiot outside. It's perfectly fine. Yeah, I mean, you don't care about any manifestation or anything about the divine. You have got an experience, wonderful. But here it's not just that. This field has to be transformed. Therefore the challenge. And it comes in everyone. And that's why the mother speaks of those 12 qualities. Perseverance, equanimity, endurance, plasticity. They're so important. How to develop them? We can ask her, but life will give us enough opportunity. That's why this yoga goes on all the time. You believe you are drinking juice and you discover it's water. So how you react, how you respond. Somebody suddenly stops you for all the wrong reasons and you are angry and then you say, well, that's his job description, but what's my goal? What's my path? So to stay focused on that. And when we move like that, then journey becomes so wonderful, because all life becomes the unfolding of the divine yoga inside. So this is the process, the logic, and the magic. The magic comes particularly when the psychic emerges. So first important step on this yoga is to find the soul. It's the easiest. It takes time, but yet of all the other things, it's the easiest. And all that it requires is a sincere seeking, devotion, surrender, and of course in the heart, to do everything from the heart, deeper heart, to love the mother, to open to the mother, to eat from the heart, to sip from the heart, to walk with the heart, deeper heart, not the surface heart. And as a result, one day, a door opens. She's saying, whatever we may be doing, concentration should be here on her presence. As simple as that. We can add a name, we can have a form, ma, 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 and as we do that, slowly the heart begins to open. This is the easiest one. And when it opens, then there is a complete reversal. All the world's values change, as we were discussing the other day. Things which people say, oh, this is so wonderful, you realize that you are trapped. And things which people felt are so difficult, and you realize that, yes, he is carrying me through it all. It's needed for my progress. So this is the journey, and ultimately mother is the secret. This yoga cannot be done without turning to the mother. Very categorically Sri Aurobindo has said, there is no other intermediary guru in this yoga. Anyone claiming to be so is, to use the mildest word, is an imposter. We are all helpers, we are all brothers, sisters, moving along, little ahead, little behind, together. We are all in the same boat, but we are not the captain of the boat. The captain of the ship is mother. She is the one who is steering. But we are all holding hands, as brothers and sisters, together. But all in the same boat, moving toward that grand culmination. She is the one who is carrying the ship. She is the one who is fueling the ship. So the more we turn to her, mother is the beginning, mother is the end, mother is the path, mother is the goal. So people often say that, well, if I don't have that kind of opening to mother, what do I do? So we have also things for that. So this is a very interesting four-step process. Shravana, Manana, Darshana, Nididhyasana. Shravana. Read her works. Hear about her, there will be an opening. Shravan. Manan, think about her. Want to serve her. All this will create an opening. Darshana, feel her, see her within, with the eye of imagination or the eye of mind, doesn't matter. And one day, because she knows the intent, the reality will replace the image. So Darshana and Nididhyasana, to meditate upon her, to be all the time full of her. So this is the process. Be in the company of those who are God lovers, and slowly this will open. That's the idea of going to ashram, coming to these places, because it opens that door inside. Because generally the world is full of all these forces, which is like a poison. So when once we open to the mother, the rest is done. And Sri Aurobindo has said that psychically open to the mother, not with a calculation, not with all kinds of our idea conception, and hand over oneself in the hands of the mother to take us along this journey, across the journey, and then to trust her completely. Imagine if mama is cooking a good meal, and all the time the child is saying, why are you doing this? What are you doing? What masala are you putting? I think you should raise the temperature more. I think your oil is less than. What will mother say? Mama will say, look here, you know, why don't you play outside? When the meal is ready, I'll call you. Isn't it? Cooking will be much better. So that's how life should be turned toward the mother from morning till night. Somebody, mother gave this advice that when you wake up in the morning, to Surendra George's wife, Daya Behen Taradi's mother, she asked, what should I do? She says, when you wake up in the morning, 10 minutes you just say, ma, 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 ma. That's it. When you go to sleep, for some time you just simply say, ma, ma. Yoga is so extremely simple. And in between, whenever you remember, she was asked, tell me one method. See, Satprem asks repeatedly, one method, one method. She says, hasn't Sri Aurobindo told you, open to the mother, this body has been... She tells all this, no, no, mother, but people ask, one method, our method. And then she speaks about the mantra. It must spring up from within. So what is the best mantra for the yoga? Sri Aurobindo uses very beautiful letter. There is no method in this yoga except to call the take the mother's name or mine. And then he says, usually mother's name is enough. Sometimes the dual name has its own power. Sri Aurobindo, Nami Anando, Jogi Rajo, Namo Namo, Mira Mata, Jagadhrata, Karuna Moi, Namo Namo. So just mother's name. He has said this. No method in this yoga except to take the mother's name in or mine. Now, should we listen to that or listen to all the other complicated stuff? It's too simple to be believed sometimes, but this is what brings results. So this is the path, lovely journey. Mother used the word great adventure, but she also said that the end is certain. But what will happen to you on the way? She says, I don't know. Something very interesting. Some people get frightened. Well, it's an adventure, it's an unfolding. You know, if life were too predictable, frankly, it'll be too boring. The sense of unpredictability. Sometimes I say, when people have this issue of relationship, I say, you know what? Both of you are leading very predictable lives. So the mystery is gone. So when there is no mystery in each other, then the relationship enters into a... Keep the sense of the mystery, and it's only possible if both continue to progress. Otherwise, after some time, you know everything. Hey, he's like that, he's boring. There is acceptance, but if both are progressing, then you know, life contains that mystery, that sense of the unexpected, the unpredictable can be something so wonderful. So all that it means is that, well, the unfolding will take place in its own way. But ultimately, whose end is certain? You will be carried through everything. So don't try to judge the Divine Mother by your limited mind, because we don't know what we are carrying inside, how things will come out, how they will unfold. We don't know the knots that we have tied up, which one needs to be opened. Just one little letter will suffice. So many letters of Sri Aurobindo. So we know Sahanadi and her love for Sri Aurobindo and Mother, of course. So once she had a lot of bleeding going on, you know, that menorrhagia as it is called, and she prays to Sri Aurobindo. Then she asks the sadhak, please ask him what something he should do. There's so much of bleeding. What to do? Of course, she is taking treatment. Then Sri Aurobindo's letter. Tell her that these are the last remnants of sexual desire which are passing out from her. We are doing what needs to be done. Just go through the process. Can we even imagine? What seems to... The divine doesn't work according to our fixed format. In everything, in every which way. And those who have gone ahead, they will tell us. Things which we never wanted to do, and suddenly they are confront us, like Rishabh Chand. First job description was kill the... bucks inside the cot. He's a Jain. He's very happy initially that I am accepted in the ashram. Mother will give me work. He writes a very big thank you letter. Then mother's note comes. Rishabh Chand, you have to kill the bucks inside the cot. Now Rishabh Chand is in a problem. So he keeps that letter aside, writes another letter to the mother. To Sri Aurobindo. Mother is French, who knows, she doesn't understand. He writes to Sri Aurobindo, my mother perhaps doesn't know, I am a Jain. So, meaning thereby that I can't do this. Sri Aurobindo's reply, whatever mother asks you to do, take it as her command and do it. That's your path to progress in sadhana. It broke so many constructions inside him. Ravindraji, same with. So we don't know what are the knots we are carrying inside and how the divine works through them. It's just unimaginable, actually. As the yoga unfolds, one just wonders. Oh my God, when you look back, then you say, I was such a fool. Not that one has become a little lesser fool, but no, still. But slowly she changes F-double-O-L fool into the Hindi wala fool. Flower. That's the magic. She is the magic.